But basically, don't look to me for answers. I'm not here to give you any prepackaged, nicely wrapped up answers. My job is to stimulate you and to throw you off balance, and my answer is always going to be, well, think for yourself, although I'll try to the best of my ability, I'll try to make it more fun for you to think for yourself. Now, there's a mic here and a mic there, so if anyone's got some smart-ass thing to say, why don't you come on up and...
Hi, this is Katrina, and this is Zooming in the Lens podcast. Welcome to Zooming in the Lens. This is Katrina, and I'm here with Tommy Stewart.
Hi.
Hi. So Tommy is, he's my love.
Oh, that's very sweet.
I know. I'm sweet today. I'm feeling sweet today. And he's also the other half of functional yoga. He runs functional body movement. And we knew each other back in the music industry. So Tommy's a drummer and now a fitness personal trainer, sort of guru to the stars, right?
Hardly. Hardly.
So, you know, my favorite quote to say to myself every day is by Neil Tyson deGrasse, the scientist.
Neil deGrasse Tyson, yeah.
Yeah, Neil deGrasse Tyson. Right. Did I say his name backwards?
That's the problem when you got three names. You don't know where they go in.
I know. He'll be infamous soon, and we could just say deGrasse, right?
Sure.
He says everyone should have their minds blown at least once a day.
He said that?
Yes.
Oh, boy, I feel like that was much more ancient than him. But
it probably is. I mean, how much stuff is being regurgitated?
That's true. Maybe he's paraphrasing.
It needs to be regurgitated. We need to have different shifts of perceptions with the same thing.
I like that, though. That's good.
Well, it also shows us how much we're not getting our minds blown every day.
Yeah.
For me, until I found my practice and took a minute to look inside, I think I was looking for things to blow my mind that were more magical, like magical thinking-wise. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but also, I mean, I've known you for...
blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. 15, 20 years, I don't know, something like that. And the other part of that is magical, but in the sense of magical living. Like, you've always been really excited about the sort of very simple things in a very childlike way. So, you know, even as an adult, going on an Easter egg hunt at Easter time would be mind-blowing to you because you're...
Because I would step all over the children to find an egg.
Exactly. you would push down a six-year-old to get to the golden egg. But, I mean, so when you said, you know, having your mind blown, I would encompass that in there, too, in regards to you in that way, where you got your mind blown by simple everyday things that were still sort of wonderment for you,
mm-hmm.
which I think is great.
Yeah, I've kind of always been that way. I think until I started practicing and studying, I think I just thought that everybody was. Hmm. I thought everybody was curious. And it turns out that maybe everybody's curious, but whether or not they live by that curiosity or they act on that curiosity, I think are very different things.
Sure.
Not that one's right or wrong, but I can't imagine doing what I do now without curiosity. It sort of leads the way.
Right, that's key.
So I think my mind being blown, you know, my mind gets blown my whole life on little things, like you said. But now they're big things. that are not even seen. They're big things like how we're walking in this human body, like how our blood's pumping and our heart's beating without us having anything to do with it.
Right.
Like, I'm not sitting here saying, heartbeat, heartbeat. Can't talk to you, Tommy, because I'll die because my heart will stop beating.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and again, going back to what I was saying before, these are things that maybe we take for granted or don't think about, but are much bigger in scope than something as simple as finding an Easter egg. But, and I'm sure where he's coming from, that science sort of, you know, outer stellar kind of place of planets and solar systems, all of it can be likened to, you know, the human gait cycle. Isn't it freaky how, you know, the back leg has to start to move, rotate inward as you take a step? I mean, it's a very complex process.
Right.
The act of walking.
Right.
When you break it down.
Yeah, how could that not be exciting?
It's terribly exciting.
I mean, you know, yeah, you could get too thinky about it. I can see that point. You can get too cerebral and in your head with things like that, but it's not about that. I think you can, if you really look at it, you can bypass that place or work with that place and drop down into this just pure curiosity rather than curiosity for a result.
Mm.
But just curiosity for the sake of it. And I kind of read this quote to myself every day in one way or another. And my mind does get blown.
Okay, the question is, has that happened today already?
Oh, yeah.
It has?
Oh, yeah.
Would you like to elaborate?
Oh, yes. I'm going to bring up Facebook.
Oh, jeez.
I know. Tommy's new to Facebook, believe it or not. Yes, you have not gone back into 1985. It is 2016, but Tommy is new to Facebook.
And extremely reluctant. And not even really personally. So.
Yeah, I mean, there are some good things about it.
Certainly, yeah.
I like the communal part of it. I like a lot of things about it. I like the information I get. It just depends who in me is receiving the information. If I'm trying to prove a point, then I probably wouldn't be on Facebook.
Well, and like a lot of things, you know, some
I
of
mean,
these...
I mean, not prove a point, but prove my point, you know.
Right. And like many other things, you know, these big changes in society usually have unintended consequences. And I could think of, you know, many from something like Facebook.
Mm-hmm. You start to get the hang of it, though, and you can see it for what it is, just like everything else.
Yeah, I guess it's just a tool like anything else, right?
Absolutely.
But going back to what you were saying, I think that the idea is, though, is who in you is using that tool.
Absolutely.
And how are you able to stay present and sort of unattached to what that can offer you, and use the tool without relying on the tool or needing the tool.
Well, you know that how philosophy and Eastern thinking never claims that it knows anything. It never says this is what it is. It uses esoteric words and ways in which to describe and stories and Buddhist koans. And I mean, it's riddled with stories because it's trying to give us what it's like,
right?
Not what it is. So if you're looking at anything that is material, you know, and something like Facebook that's outside of yourself, technically, even though it's inside of a computer or inside, you know, mainframes or whatever it is, and you're looking for that to be what it is, that's the side of me that, like, that's why I practice.
Right.
To practice seeing the world as what it's like, which is just another way of saying don't take things so literally. Don't be so linear in your thinking. So, yeah, okay, I'm on Facebook.
Yeah, so let's hear the mind blower.
Well, you know, I'm not, I mean, this isn't, it's a mind blower to me, because I think what tends to happen when you study and practice is you know, we're narcissistic creatures, so you start to think everybody else is too. And so then your mind could get blown very easily.
Right. Okay.
So, you know, I at least want to say to people listening that Tommy and I's conversation that we're using as a podcast today is, it might get into conversations that, I don't know, maybe if you're not wanting to have somebody hear about things like drugs or whatever. I don't know what we're getting into, but if you're under 18 and, you know, you maybe don't want to tune into this, we are not sitting here doing anything other than having a conversation like you are in your house. And they're where we're at, and they're observations. Rather than saying what it is, we're saying, here's a shift of perception of what it's like. So that's my ad. You know, you get on podcasts now, and they're like, thank you to Squarespace for this podcast.
Oh, right. Right. So, okay, yeah.
My disclaimer is my advertising.
That's the preamble. Okay.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm on Facebook. I'm not a very political person. Never really have been. It's not that I don't want change. I do. But I know that the change has to start with me. Before I can go picketing and fighting for peace or making change in the outside world. So I just, you know, I work on that. I work on me. And I see a post today from somebody who I actually know and have great affection for. And this person also is Christian. I'm pretty sure that if I'm not quoting that right, but I'm not using names. And this person puts up a post about how Obama has decreed by presidential order to allow any school bathroom and locker room to be accessible by any gender. I don't know if you've heard about this.
Yes.
You have?
Yeah.
And this person was using Facebook to call everybody to action, to call their senator, U.S. representative, assemblyman, state senator, and demand that they stop this. So I followed the link, and it was talking about the Texas governor, Greg Abbott, and how he rejects all the issues that have to do with gay rights and transgender rights. And Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, he says, this is quote, okay? He was at the Texas Republican Party convention. He says, homosexuality must not be accepted as an acceptable alternative. I mean, I can't even get that out of my mouth. Homosexuality must not be accepted as an acceptable alternative.
Well, first of all, grammatically, I don't think it makes a whole lot of sense.
From a lieutenant governor, right?
but I'm not a linguist. And secondly, wow.
Mm-hmm.
I was aware of the situation in North Carolina that's been in the news for quite some time now. Obviously, there's been other states that have been involved in this kind of thing for some time. The transgender stuff is most on the forefront now. Mm. You know, probably because the people on that side of the issue kind of lost the battle when it comes to gay rights and mm-hmm. things. That's kind of, that ship has sailed. So now they got to move on to, they're just like clinging onto anything that's even remotely connected with that. And transgender, oh, let's jump on that, because that's a new, we can toot that horn for some time now. They're just on the wrong side of history, that's all.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not all, it's terrible.
No, it's not
but
all.
But they're on the wrong side of history.
Well, so this person posts this and says, you know, everybody needs to do something about this. We have to stop this. And then I usually don't even look at posts like that.
You went down the rabbit hole?
I did. I went down the rabbit hole for all of 10 minutes. And I see other people posting saying they demand a member of the school. They're going to demand that a member of the school escort every child to the bathroom. This is one person posting, like, well, if that's going to happen, then my child has to be escorted to the bathroom every time. And another person says, I'm going to have strong words with my child's school. And somebody else posts, a world without borders, bathrooms without gender preferences. Let's give up, right? Time to fight. And I was like, don't do it, Katrina, don't do it. Because I remember being in the music industry, and if you go to a message board or anything where people are saying stuff about you or somebody you know or an opinion, and if you post...
Oh, forget it. You can't.
It's all over.
You can't.
It's all over. So I've never been somebody that really did that, but here I am, and... There's also the other side of it, that as long as I don't speak up for what feels right in my heart too, not that they're wrong and I'm right, I'm not trying to say that, but if change and community and acceptance is what I'm practicing, why don't I softly just post a response? And so I did.
Yeah. Okay, I don't even need to hear what happened yet, because I can pretty much guess what happened.
Well, I was very diplomatic. I'm not going to read it or say it word for word, but I just said, if this happens, is there any room for just a shift of perception? This is not about right or wrong. I don't really want to piss anybody off. But I just said... there are so many differences when we're looking at everybody and the world from our mind. It's limitless differences that we all have. And what about the transgender children that don't have a bathroom, that don't have their place? Because if we're making places now where everybody needs to fit into a box and they don't have one, if what we're trying to teach, especially, I just, from a place of Christianity also, if what we're trying to teach is love, and how could we look at this in a way to see what are the deeper messages that we're sending to children? Because we all know that children really learn by what we do. They learn by what we say too. But they learn by watching us.
Sure.
And if
and most of the times what they see when they're watching us are things that we're not even aware that we're doing.
Right.
There's a lot of cues happening there.
Well, and there's a lot of, like, embedded messages, too. Like, if we keep thinking so linear, we think that it's about, and I understand what people were saying on this post was they didn't want their daughter going into the bathroom with a boy student. What could go on in there? What about bullying? What about... sexual abuse from one student to another? And I'm sure the thread went on. I sort of stopped after I posted, and I took these things into account, and I went back into my own time in school in an all-girls bathroom where there was bullying, mm-hmm. and there was people engaging in sexual stuff that I'm sure school wouldn't want. Lots of things go on, but this underground message that I was looking at was, without there being like, yes, we should, segregate our bathrooms, or no, we shouldn't, but looking at it in a frame of the deeper underlining messages of different is not good, our hang up in this country in particular with sex, this propensity to also look at educators as guards. And if we're trying to teach children acceptance in general, wouldn't it be a great education to have a girl and a boy and a transgender in the same bathroom and experiencing life, experiencing what happens from that, and without just knowing that, A, we're also telling our youth and our children we don't trust you. I mean, there's a lot of underneath messages.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on there. Now, let's back up a second. Are you saying that this decree, I don't think there's been decrees for in this...
That was the words that this person chose. Okay. Yeah.
Are you saying that he's basically saying that all the bathrooms are just wide open, it's the Wild West? Or are you saying...
All schools... bathrooms?
Yes.
And it was bathrooms and locker rooms.
But is it for...
Unisex.
Making them all unisex?
Yes.
And this is probably born out of this transgender issue?
I
or is it just if you're transgender? Because that's interesting. I mean, I find that a broad sweeping statement, and I can see a lot of sticky points with just making it completely wide open and it's the Wild West.
Yeah, no, I get the particulars of it.
But I think what I was
trying to say is that everything in life isn't so linear, and we think we're protecting, we think we're shielding. Like, I send my kids to school and I want them to be safe, so boys here, girls here, and no shenanigans, nothing will go on, like as if we can control that. And my point was just that the minute a baby enters a home, they start watching and taking cues, and if it really came down for me to be about a parenting issue, and not a parenting issue, but more of if we communicate as parents to children and try to guide them rather than bully them into what we feel is right or wrong, maybe when the child goes into the bathroom and there's a boy in there, or a boy's in there and a girl's inappropriate or whatever, they will have some resources and tools in which to handle that. Because school, learning algebra and learning all of these tools that may or may not be used in the outside world is great, but the tools of life need to be taught too. And the tools of life, if it's a unisex bathroom and locker room, are going to be more suited to what it's like in the outside world than it is sitting there learning algebra, unless you're going to be an accountant or somebody working with numbers.
Right, and I hear what you're saying. You're just using this this concept as a platform to talk about something much deeper, and I appreciate that. Obviously, you're not. I don't know if you're whether you are or aren't.
Tooting
the horn of unisex bathrooms, which is that certainly is an issue that can be debated. But I see what you're saying. Obviously, boys and girls are different, but those differences are mostly, A, obvious.
And aren't they part of
physically,
life?
Physically, right. And also, I can see where the unisex, it's obviously a touchy issue, but it kind of broadens, it would kind of maybe put the idea in that we're more similar than we are different. Right. Obviously, we have differences physically and those things, but in a lot of other ways, there should be no differences because we're all human beings. Whether you're female and I'm male, we understand what those differences are. But beyond that, and there are many things beyond that, we're no different, absolutely no different.
Yeah, I think it's out of 20,000 genomes, we have 5 that are different.
Really?
Is that just incredible?
Well, and I also like what you said about it does go back to control, and when you prohibit something, every single time something comes up that's worse.
Yeah.
Again, going back to those unintended consequences, your heart may be in the right place by making something, by prohibiting something.
Of course, you're scared, and you don't want your child to be hurt.
It's based in fear, certainly, and we're just dumping our fears because of what we were learned onto our kids about what's right and wrong, and boys and girls, and this and that.
You can't escort your children from the home to the bus, from the bus into the school. From, you know, the school back into a bus and back home. Like, eventually, there's going to have to be some building of a communication between all of, you know, the parents and the children. Not saying that that's not going on, but at the same time, we can only give them that which we're living, that which we're embodying. And if we make this huge issue out of this unisex bathroom thing, what are the deeper meanings here? Boys and girls separate, bad. Let me tell you something. It's going to happen. And I'm not saying, oh, well, of course, you know, parents know it's going to happen, but we don't want it to happen in our schools. But it's already happening in schools. And what better than to have the experience? I'm just shifting the perception here. Teachers are in the next room, and there's a unisex bathroom, and boys and girls are learning to live together, pee together, respect each other, not respect each other. Whatever the consequences are, whatever the outcome is, it's happening in real time, real experiences, in a school where in the next room are parents.
Right.
Would you rather that?
Well,
be the experiment and the experience.
But unless a person is practicing like you and I, the first thing that comes to mind is, okay, so what if your daughter or your son is on the other end of something awful because of this situation? Then are you going to change your tune? And
something awful did happen to me in school. And it happened, and I don't now blame the school.
Right, but going back to, I'm not talking about you, because you weren't the person at the time to either support the rules or make the rules.
No, but
I
was being protected, quote
right.
unquote.
That's what I'm,
that's
protection,
what I'm saying.
Right.
So, I was being protected and
right.
it still happened.
Okay.
So
right.
all I can go from is my experience of of course love is the right reason, but is love all about this shell?
Right.
And about hardening? And what about this
exclusion?
If the government is willing to be compassionate towards differences in things like transgender and children already feel different. They already feel separate. We already, at that age, God, it's such a young age. We're all trying to find our way. And so the message is going to be, I'll kill the school if anything happens, and this is horrible, and we need to fight. So kids are just seeing it from, here's the differences. We're now, there's a chance for us to all be together. Parents say, not good. Not good. We need to separate. Everybody go to their corner. And I know that, yeah, I'm taking it to a deeper level. But to me, I think that children, they take these messages and they become way bigger issues. Where did you learn to fear something? Where did you learn that you weren't supposed to pee in front of a man?
Right. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, this... And maybe this leads to other things. I mean, me, if I was a parent, I can't say that I would be on, you know, like cheerleading for that kind of situation to be happening. It's a sticky one. And I'm not sure that I heard it that same way from what you were talking about, but that is an interesting thing, which But again, it goes back to anytime you try to control something or prohibit something, a lot of unintended consequences end up happening. And when you're thinking about, and in my, to my knowledge and in my experience, what limited experience that I have being on this earth, the government is slow to show compassion.
Right.
Extremely slow. So if you want to talk about, you know, the powers that be showing compassion, first thing I think of, what's the ulterior motive? Because I don't think compassion is the first thing on the ruling class's mind.
No. And again, it's not really about the right or wrong of it.
Right.
What if this was an opportunity for dialogue with your child? What if, okay, so say it does happen. It's an opportunity for parents to sit down with kids and discuss acceptance. And everybody doesn't have to look alike, and yeah, everybody doesn't have to be alike. And
that would mean parenting and having to actually do something besides throw the iPad in front of the kid. I'm sorry to say that. That's the way we live now, unfortunately.
With some.
I mean, you know, I guess I'm only lucky in the sense that iPads weren't around when I was being raised. Otherwise, I probably would have had one in front of me, too.
You had Donkey Kong thrown in front of you.
No, it was before Donkey Kong. you only had four channels, and you had to get up to turn the dial. Mm-hmm. And there was definitely no remote control. My family didn't roll like yours did. you work with what you have. And yeah. I think incrementally parenting has seemingly and obviously probably gotten much harder and harder and harder with the next generation. I think it's more difficult now than ever.
Absolutely.
To be a parent.
Absolutely. Every kid has a personality, right? And I think that when we look at things like law and government, we're roping everybody into a statistic. We're putting everybody into one place, and you can't. What's the word I'm looking for? You can't. It's gone from my head. You can't veer off of that course. And okay. If you do veer off of that course, so like in regards to parenting, whether we discuss it or not, and whether parents discuss it or not, our general consensus is
consensuses
about the right ways and the wrong ways to parent. And it would look maybe insensitive if parents took the opposite view, which I'm not saying is the right one, of, oh, I totally trust my child and he or she will know the right thing to do if something happens. I'm not saying that is. I'm just saying that there change is inevitable. Change will always happen. We can't just look at the Constitution of the United States and live by this report as if there's not evolution of psychology, of science, of life, of drugs, of personalities. And when you go by that kind of, you know, law book, we keep picking sides. And if parenting is about the right way to parent and the wrong way to parent, you can't possibly parent individually. You can't possibly look at a child and say, my son does this, but I didn't have to do that with my daughter. They do. People do that. Mm. But there's still a consensus of the right way to parent and the wrong way to parent. And so being okay with change is a deeper topic here than it is about the law.
Or at least how you started this whole thing out, at least shifting your perception to consider another viewpoint of the same situation.
That's right.
Because without that, are you really making a truly informed decision and taking action on the decision unless you have that?
Yes, and that's, I feel like, what my response on the Facebook post was saying. just shift perception just for a second.
Right, which is interesting because then I could imagine somebody else who's all hot and bothered shift their perception and take what you mean to be something completely different.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And then you're
I'm
off sure. to the races.
And I don't want anybody to feel like I'm coming from a place with an agenda, because I'm not. But if there's one perception on this Facebook thread that I saw, I was just offering another shift without any agenda, but just to look at it from a transgender child's point of view, and right. how to teach our children how to have personal responsibilities, and how to teach parents how to have personal responsibility. I'm not saying there's a right or wrong, and I'm not saying somebody doesn't have personal responsibility, but it is bringing up a topic about how to shift our perception without an agenda. You know, it makes me think about the very first memory I have of shifting my perception was with this Twilight Zone episode that I saw. I mean, you probably...
How to Serve Man?
Will have seen it. No, it's called People Are Alike All Over.
Oh.
Okay, so Twilight Zone, if you don't know, was a fantastic shift of perception show.
Yeah, for me it was How to Serve Man.
How to Serve Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to have to tell me about that, How to Serve Man. I don't remember because I want to make sure that it's not the same one. That's why I'm cutting you off, because I only just recently realized what the title was. I'd been watching this one for years, and it could be the same one, but this shift of perception, I remember seeing this as a child and being completely, no, having my mind completely blown. Just as Degrassi said, I literally felt this. So it's these two astronauts. They're going to Mars in a spaceship. The lead character and his name's Samuel Conrad, and his partner's named Marcus. And so they take off in the spaceship. They land on Mars. Actually, they crash on Mars. And they're crashed. They find out if each other is alive. They're alive. Marcus is holding on by a thread. And Marcus says to Samuel, open the doors, open the doors. We're here. Like, let's get some help. Let's get some help. And Sam stood at the door saying, I don't want to open it. I feel like this show was written by philosophers, seekers, because I could see myself standing at a door in life. Many doors that I've stood at and will stand at again, saying, no, I don't want to know what's on the other side. Just like this change, you know, with the law.
Well, that's why philosophy is so great, because you can, if you really open your mind to it, you can apply it to everything that's happening in your life. And you see the philosophy in everything, and you see the mythology in everything.
Totally, yeah.
And that's a much better way to kind of look at these seemingly mundane things that happen to us every day.
Yeah, not limited to philosophy at all.
Sure.
I mean, there's so many things that do that. And so, yeah, Sam is standing there going, I don't want to open the door, I don't want to open the door. Boy, have I been there, not wanting to open the door. And Marcus dies. You know, the crash killed him. So Sam has to open the door. And he opens the door. And who greets him? Not aliens that look like green monsters with like one eye, but people that look just like us. And he's like, oh my God. I mean, his mind was blown in that moment. He walks out of the spaceship. His mind is completely blown. He's like, you look just like us. You look just like me. And they start communicating. And he says, Sam says, you understand English. You speak my language. Poetically, they reply with, no, you speak our language, but because you believe you can't hear it, you think we're speaking your language.
Wow.
And I mean, yeah, I was a kid just watching that going,
wow, that's even deeper than the example that I was going to mention, for sure.
And then he gets this attraction to this woman in it. I can't remember her name. Tanya, oh no, Tina, that's what it was, right, Tina. And Tina says, don't worry, don't be scared, no one's going to hurt you. Believe me, just believe, nothing's going to hurt you. I really feel like these words were chosen very carefully. And he says, okay, I'll believe you. And so they then escort him and say, you know, we know you want to see the town and the city and everything, but before we do that, we thought you might want to relax a little while. And he's like, that would be great. So they escort him into this house, into this structure. And when you walk in, you see the structure. It looks exactly like an earthling's home. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. It's like kitchen and a living room and a bedroom and all this stuff, curtains. And he's like, how did you know this? And they said, we just wanted you to be in a comfortable surrounding. Mm-hmm. And they then say, okay, well, you know, clean yourself up, have a drink. And he's like, this is fantastic. Yeah, I'm going to relax in my home. You know, you're getting all the parallels here. Mm-hmm. And they walk out. And they shut the door behind him, whatever. And he has a drink and he relaxes for a little while. And then I guess, I don't know, something like he got stuffy in there. And so he goes to the curtains and he opens the curtains. There's a brick wall behind him. No window. He's like, what is that about? And he goes to all the other windows and brick walls again. He goes to the front door. It's locked. He pulls the curtains off and exposes an entire brick wall. I mean, the parallels there are pretty great too. And then all of a sudden, the brick wall disappears, and what gets revealed? But a gate, bars. And on the other side are all these people that look just like him, peering in on him. And he is going, why aren't you, like, what are you guys doing? Hey, what's with the bars? Why are you guys all staring at me? I mean, there's like 25, 50 people just staring back in at him. And he looks down and he sees this sign that's in front of the bars that's facing all of these people. And it says, Earth creature in its natural habitat.
Right. Right.
It was amazing. It was totally amazing. And there he is. This complete shift that the viewer gets to see. I mean, firstly, that's exactly what we're doing in zoos. We're bringing animals into their comfortable surroundings, as if we know what their comfortable surroundings are, because we value what we see. And what we see of animals is that they're in with trees and grass and wilderness. Right. We're taking out all the other pieces.
And then for our entertainment, they're being held behind bars and cages.
Yeah. And we're thinking, no, they're happy. It's great. They're okay because they're in their comfortable surroundings. And I mean, that's a whole other debate to get into, not really what I'm going for here. But a show like that shifted my perception. I mean, first I was watching it and I thought, great, Mars is going to have humans just like us, as if just like us is what we want. I mean, firstly, do we really want that? And then, you know, to thinking, wow, they have houses just like we do, and we're feeling comfortable and comfortable and comfortable, comfortable, like that person on Facebook who is comfortable with things staying the same way.
Sure.
Comfortable with a male bathroom and a female bathroom and separation and not taking other things into consideration or even a shift of perception. I'm not saying this person in general. I don't know. I haven't seen this person in 20 years. They could be shifting perceptions like crazy. I was just looking at this as an opportunity to remember that we have that personal responsibility to our children has to start with ourselves first. So the parents shifting perception will then allow the kids to shift perception.
And under the guise of protection, that's a tough one.
It's a really tough one. And so what were the aliens doing? They were protecting the human and its natural habitat.
Right, right.
And really, he felt like a prisoner. But what if we're all prisoners in this place of sticking to the course, sticking to the law, sticking to the rules, not so that we take the other side of it and fight the rules, but because there's a middle place where we can look at all sides of it and see the benefits of all things. I mean, even just look at Ram Dass in the 60s with the drug, the revolution of drugs, being able to look at somebody like Ram Dass, who was a Harvard professor. Ram Dass is Richard Alpert, he's my teacher, and, you know, on all accounts, he was had all the accolades that you would want. In our culture, we value knowledge and proof and belief systems way more than we value personal experience, like parenting the children differently. You parent children differently, but when we have rule books,
or allowing them to express themselves in whatever way that is, meaning art and things like that, as opposed to memorization of 2 times 2, and
it's not the rule book's fault. It's not the Constitution of the United States' fault. What it is our lack of deviation to be curious for personal experience. And it's not a fault. It's just, unless people come along and help shift our perception, not saying that was my job on Facebook, like not at all, but I felt at this moment that I can't complain about the lack of shift of perception unless I'm willing to put myself out there and be willing to be beat up on Facebook. Which I'm sure that I'm being beaten up on Facebook. I might not be, but here I was wanting that. And so I just needed to, you know, maybe take part in it for a minute on Facebook and say, here's another shift, like the Twilight Zone episode did for me, like Ram Dass did for me, you know, who became a spiritual teacher. I mean, somebody told me the other day, I don't know if this is true, but Ram Dass's book, Be Here Now, has oversold the Bible. I don't know if that's true. Don't quote me.
I can't imagine that's true.
I can't either.
In any way, shape, or fashion.
I know. I don't know if that's true. That's why I'm saying don't listen to a word I'm saying.
If it was, I think the world would be a completely different place.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't mean that, no, because that's saying that everything bought is being read, or who in you is reading it is the right person.
Well,
I don't know that.
That's a whole nother debate.
Right.
Because, listen, that's the way information and the dissemination of it works.
Right.
If there's enough of it out there, it starts to become the truth. And this is...
But don't you think it's more about your intention? Like, if your intention is to prove that we shouldn't have change, you are going to read something that's only going to... what's the word?
Support.
Yes, thank you. Support.
Yeah, okay, but what I was just talking about, the sheer numbers of, I don't know how many Bibles have been sold in history.
Oh, I don't know. Don't even go.
But
on
I'm saying
that.
If a book, any book, had sold as many copies as I'm sure the Bible is out there.
Yeah.
That would absolutely, in some way, even in some small way, would have to influence people's thinking about whatever that book contains.
Yeah,
there's just too much of it
course,
out there.
Of course, I mean, I'm aware that intention doesn't keep people safe. So I'm not saying like have a great intention and you'll be kept safe. But I think the important message in this is that just because somebody says something, that doesn't mean that's going to keep you safe either.
I agree.
Right?
Yeah.
So aren't we here to live and have personal experience, or are we here to just get this handbook on what it's like to be a human in our natural habitat and just take it for the linear perspective that it is and not deviate from it? And we cannot keep protecting each other and saying that that's what love is.
Right.
It's not only that. I don't even know if it is that. What do I know? Don't listen to me. All I'm offering is that my mind was blown with these shifts of perceptions.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look back at what Ram Dass and his, excuse me, and what another man, Timothy Leary's work was in the 60s at Harvard doing studies with psychedelics. And, you know, Timothy Leary's famous line, turn on, tune in, drop out.
Right.
Right? Ram Dass was more about turning in. But they were doing these studies. They get kicked out of Harvard for doing these studies. And Ram Dass will tell you himself, rightfully so, because it wasn't the establishment.
Yeah, you couldn't challenge in that way.
It wasn't what that was for. Harvard was for knowledge. Well, it was for that education.
Yeah.
Ram Dass and Timothy Leary were more talking about how to expand that from places that maybe aren't proven. Right? So they go on to do their work. You could, you know, Google them and find out what that work was. But I feel like, you know, we can encompass the governmental fear of drugs, just for example. Like I started to call it the Leary effect, you know, like the Leary effect of he freaked a lot of people out because he didn't follow the rule book. And
yeah.
He wanted to see how much deeper we could go into psychedelics to enhance our spiritual growth, even enhance maybe even an educational growth. Who knows?
Well, I think Ram Dass certainly had that way of thinking behind it. I think Timothy Leary was more about a revolution in a way.
Yeah.
And Ram Dass, I think, definitely was using that as a way to expand consciousness and get into the more spiritual realm of things. Leary, to my knowledge, was all about, listen, all you are is your mind.
Mm.
So I think there was more of a revolutionary sort of approach that he had. And that's where the two of them were really interesting together.
Yeah, they really were.
And there's a lot of great debates online you can find where Absolutely. They talk about this kind of thing.
I love them both. I do.
Yeah, fascinating.
And I love that, you know, really Ram Dass's approach to that was that the drugs wear off. And surely it can't be that we need the drugs to get to these states. And so his journey went on to discover that. Leary's, you know, went on to discover some different things. But to me, I see it as one side was Ram Dass and Leary sort of representing to the general public the unknown and the individual experiencer.
Right.
And who in us was experiencing it. And that curiosity. And the other side of it was steeped in knowledge and statistics, and that it's the belief system that we need to uphold. And we've seen all of these people go down the road and make a right, and they keep ending up at the same place, so that must be the case for everybody.
Well, then that goes back to your whole thing about, and this is why for essentially all drugs, it's all about control. How do you control society? And again, control, protection, it's based in fear. And certainly in the case of pretty much all drugs in this country, it essentially started as a racist sort of intention.
How?
Well, so in the, you know, and because drugs were prescribed in pharmacies and used for thousands, I mean, but at least certainly in this country since we got here, I think in the 1800s for sure. I'm not a scholar, but I have studied some of this stuff. So things like, you know, the coca plant where cocaine comes from, that was prescribed. Marijuana was described. It was actually cannabis. It wasn't even called marijuana at the time. You know, opioids from the poppy plant, heroin, that was all prescribed for medicinal use. And then, you know, I think as a government tries to gain control of society, what you found is that in a completely racist sort of behavior. If the black people were using it, then I mean, I even have, there's a quote out there from, they invented the Federal Bureau of Narcotics in the early 1900s, and a guy by the name of Harry Anslinger was the newly appointed person of this brand new governmental body. And at first it was about prohibition, and then when prohibition ended, you had all these agents, you got to do something with them, so create something else, and that was drugs, essentially, all drugs. But he was a known racist. I mean, and even there's writings about, documented writings of him referring to people of color in, you know, terms, not necessarily using the N-word, but in terms that we would never accept today. Never.
Well, it was a different time.
Yeah. Certainly, certainly. And again, you're a product of your times, I get that. Mm. But that was the prevailing thought that, mm-hmm. you know, if you were white, you were right. If you weren't, then you were just a demon and you had drugs to that and you were a venomous killer. Mm-hmm. And then in 1936, you know, as an example, the movie Reefer Madness comes on. If no one's ever seen it, I highly recommend it because it's hilarious. They make these people that smoked weed look like crazed lunatics. Like their eyes get all bugged out and they're like laughing hysterically, like maniacally.
Wow.
And, you know, like they're going to jump off a building or something. I mean, that's just not what happens. And it was complete propaganda. And then, you know,
to stop us from doing it.
Oh, yeah, because you can't control.
I mean, haven't they done that with every single drug?
To my knowledge.
Unless the pharmaceutical company owns it?
Well, again, that's the other part of the equation, right? I mean, you look at, I mean, we hear about it in the news all the time about this opioid epidemic, you know, Oxy and Vicodin mm-hmm. and all this stuff out there that's running rampant, and heroin in some places of the country. And, you know, of course, heroin's a Schedule One, and it's bad. But OxyContin is made by a pharmaceutical company, so that's legal. Whether it should be prescribed for long-term use for any sort of ailment, you know, that's another situation we could talk about. But the whole basis for the drug war, which essentially started in 1971, Richard Nixon.
At least in the West.
In the United States. That's when the thing really took off. And drugs were public enemy number one, which is, to me, just silly. How do you make a war on an inanimate object? It makes no sense whatsoever.
And didn't they say that way before 71, though? I mean, that was sort of happening.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the official war on drugs in this country, 1971, and Richard Nixon.
Okay.
But yeah, certainly they had prohibited things prior to that. Obviously, alcohol was in, was it 1920 to 1933, I think.
Right.
And we should have learned our lesson from that. I mean, now you would never think about, like, say you want to go get a beer, and could you imagine not being able to go anywhere to get it other than an underground place? I mean, it seems so silly, right? But yet, you know, something that comes from the earth, cannabis, that has been used for, I don't know, 5-10,000 years as textile, as you can make it into paper, all sorts of fabrics, even used medicinally, thousands and thousands of years, and it comes from the earth. I'm so much more getting into this thing that if it grows in the planet, now there's certain things that may not be good for me because my system can't digest it or whatever the problem is, but if it comes from the earth, we all come from the same material, so I got to assume that it's probably okay, or there must be some variant of it that can be used for medicine. And in fact, we know this.
Yes.
Oils and plants and flowers for thousands of years, long before any synthetic, chemically man-made version of it was created.
Right.
And again, you can't patent cannabis. because it just exists.
Interesting. Huh?
So for me, it's it always seems to work. Follow the money. If you can make a ton of money from it, then maybe your opinion on it isn't completely pure.
Right. So are you, you're for legalizing drugs?
Oh, that's a bit of a topic, and it's extremely vast.
So it's not what's actually wrong, it's how we think about what's wrong. Let's instead take what's wrong as not only wrong. Let's not be caught in the literalism of our critical conclusions and turn to the opposite for a cure. Let's make a basic therapeutic move. Search out the meaning of the symptom, the concealed yin in the overblown yang, the sparks of yang inside passive darkness. In other words, go with the wrong deeper, follow its lead towards curing itself. In other words, what I'm trying to do is find a new method rather than opposition that could make it possible to rethink all the things that are supposedly wrong or are wrong.
Music and editing, special thank you to Ian Hatton. If you'd like more information on Ian, go to mixforpix.com.